This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
What if we did take some phone calls right now on just like, what is it? What is it you would want to say to Steve Kerr today? What is it? Now, I'm not promising that we're going to do it when he comes on at 5 o'clock at all. But like, what is it you'd want to ask him? What is it you'd want to say to him? What is it that you're mad about with regard to him? Or you can call 888-957-9570 and say every single person near you who says anything bad about Steve Kerr, you think they're crazy.
There was a caller on Steiny and Goo yesterday who said, if anybody asks for Steve Kerr to be fired, I want you to meet me in downtown Hayward, and we're going to fight. And I wish I remembered his name because it was really, really funny. He's like, you can meet me right there on A Street and Mission Boulevard, right in the heart of Hayward, and introduce yourself, and we're going to fight. Because he was that adamant about this notion of firing Steve Kerr being kind of ridiculous.
It's beyond ridiculous.
And so you could look at, like, the Memphis situation. Why did Taylor Jenkins get fired?
Nope.
And you look at the Denver situation, why did Michael Malone get fired? Even look at Sacramento, why did Mike Brown get fired? And all three of those situations are unique. We don't all know the full story. We had Ramona Shelburne on yesterday, who is as dialed in of an NBA reporter as any human being on planet Earth, and she said it was a bit of a disconnect between GM and coach, coach and roster, roster and ownership, and all of it felt like it was a little bit disconnected. So if you look at this Warrior organization, owner to GM, GM to coach, coach to star players, is there any part of that chain that is anything other than fluid, golden, and impervious to any possible damage? I mean, it's not perfection, but there's no schism in any one of those parts, right? The GM made the roster better. The owner spends out of his pocket. The coach has won 4 titles, and the star players love the coach and admire the GM, and they love the owner. So what are we talking about?
I don't know.
Me either.
I mean, and I'm,
but it's rotations.
Right, but and that's not to say that, like, that can be the takeaway every night. Like, what you just laid out is a very, very large, broad view of Warrior basketball over the last 12 years. And I don't know anybody who doesn't think that. There's nobody, right? Right? None of you are looking at the last 12 years and being like, well, that was disappointing. I don't.
If you are the anyone could have coached this team guy or gal, 888-957-9570.
Or don't, actually. Throw your phone in the bay if you're that person.
I said 888-957-9570, and I meant it. Okay. I want to hear from you.
Well, if you're that person, 888-957-9571.
Is that an alternate number?
Yeah, call somebody else.
call
my message phone.
1-888-5-KERR.
888, you don't know what the hell you're talking
1-800
about.
1-800-CAN-KERR.
It's just, you
with
know
with a
I mean?
K.
But
he's out.
I don't, it's not unfair to get in on people after a night. I don't think that's unfair. I just think these things get they get out of pocket. So, like, if somebody wants to go, hey, at the 8-minute mark last night, Steve did this, and I didn't get that, and I didn't like it. Okay, that comes, like, that's a conversation. But I even short of, like, the whole, oh, let's fire Steve Kerr, I hear this a lot. Man, it's always Kerr. Every time they lose, he does the wackadoodle, and at the core of it, it feels like the fan who says that is literally trying to make the point that people with the Warriors, namely Steve, don't know what they're doing. And I'll go ahead. I've done this before. I'll admit it again. This is a hole in my game, I guess. I completely shut down when I hear that. Because it's like, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? They win constantly. The man can't seem to escape rings throughout his entire career. Everywhere he goes.
He's sixth all time among coaches.
So it's like...
in rings.
I just like, is there a way to shape the conversation to where we can do a little bit more of like stay in the moment? And that's kind of what I was getting at earlier. Like, no, the Warriors in a general sense don't get more room to be tired than other teams. I'm happening to make an opinion based on what I see is going on right now. April 10th. Is it April 10th? Is it April 10th?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
April 10th, based on very recent history, based on where they've been, who they're playing, what's going on right now. That's what I see. That's what I see. But, you know, whatever. I mean, let's hear from some people.
Well, from the YouTube chat, just to prime the pump,
yeah.
IllWill81 chimed in with, I'm that guy, followed up with, Kerr is vastly overrated.
Okay.
So that's just to try to stoke the fire a little bit, get the blood flowing.
But is that actually a genuine opinion, or is that somebody on YouTube who thinks this is how I can get a reaction out of Willard and Dibbs?
Well, I don't normally pander to those types of comments, but the fact that the individual started it with, I'm that person, tells me that they're probably genuinely of the mind that Kerr is overrated, and there is the notion that anybody could have won with this team,
yeah.
Which I don't co-sign that take. Having coached for 25 years in high school, I've had talented teams and untalented teams, and I've been able to like sit back and win and also grind as hard as I could. And I went 0-26 one year as a high school basketball
coach.
Nice
job.
Yeah, and you know what? That was probably my best coaching job ever. We were talentless, and my backcourt was a pair of twins, one of whom who just wanted to fight.
She was
punching the opposition. We'd get down 37-4, and the hands would fly.
Wait a minute, what sport was this?
This was JV girls basketball, Sandersville High School.
God, I thought you were talking about volleyball. I'm like,
oh, no.
How the hell are you punching people in volleyball?
Well, I've had some of those teams too. But
well, anyway.
Anyway, just because the coach wins doesn't mean the coach is good or bad, but Steve Kerr has won with a number of different teams.
I have an opinion about your 0-26 year.
I was overrated.
No, any coach could have taken that team to go 0-26.
Well, I actually took over when they were 0-9.
Yeah, but it's a fact.
So I only went 0-17.
Okay.
So actually not every coach could have, because the coach quit. He couldn't handle it.
Well,
they lost their first 9, and the varsity coach came to me and said, I need you to do me a favor.
I need you to lose the next 17
games. I need you to at least show up. Do you know how many bottles of booze I got from parents at the team party?
Ooh.
Dude, I'm talking handles.
Not a bad idea.
Well,
okay.
When you go 0-26, you buy the coach booze.
All right, Steve Kerr in a half hour. Until then, let's rip him. All right, David in Santa Clara. Hi, David. What's up?
I want to know the people that think that anybody could coach the Warriors. Like, who else would they want? Because you've seen Doc in the Clippers not win anything. He's only one of the Celtics, and he still can't win now. It's like, let's give Steve some credit. Got us 4 rings in, what, 11, 12-ish years? The playoff appearances and finals appearances too. Like, who else do they think is going to do it? So let's give the man some credit. Before him, before Mark Jackson, probably-ish, we weren't even able to smell the playoffs this is when back with Mike Dunleavy Jr. and Troy Murphy were playing. So but like everybody that's saying all this stuff is like bandwagon fans that haven't been watching and haven't like experienced what it feels like to actually lose and go 20 win seasons or whatnot. And it's the same thing with Kyle Shanahan too. It's like, once we do a little bad, we're blaming the coaches, but who do we want instead? Thanks for taking the call, guys.
All right, David, thanks. You know, one thing I think that we're like sort of unfortunately addicted to, I watched this with the whole Brady and Bill Belichick thing. When you get multiple people doing a good job in one place, we seem sort of obsessed over figuring out who's actually the person who did it. Now, I know it ended up feeling definitive that it was much more Brady than Belichick, and I bet Steve Kerr would be the first one to tell you, yeah, this is much more Steph than it is Steve.
Right.
That doesn't mean Steve's not doing a good job. It doesn't mean that. And actually, I think Exhibit A in the moment, if you want it to be, is to look around at what's happening in the Western Conference. Like, it's not that easy to have all the egos in the room and all the success and stay on the same page. Denver won a championship 2 years ago. Their coach did not make it to the playoffs this year. He lost his job. So did the GM. Taylor Jenkins lost his job with the Memphis Grizzlies. There's a lot to navigate that has nothing to do with rotations. And that, for me, actually might be one of the most impressive things about this era of Warrior basketball, even though Bob Myers moved on, but they handed the baton to somebody inside the building. You've got an owner and now two GMs. You've got a head coach. You had a big three. You moved one of the big three out. You brought in a new member of the big three. Two of the current big three are known of two of the most volatile players emotionally in the entire league. And then the other one is a clear all-time great. And all of that action is happening in one room, and somehow respect stays there. I think that's underrated.
It's severely underrated.
I think that's hard.
The idea of rotations, if we can just visit that part of it for a moment, the rotations are not Steve Kerr sitting there like a high school coach deciding that he wants to play Billy and not Timmy because Billy's been hustling at practice and Timmy showed up 7 minutes late and therefore I'm going to try to punish him. All of these ideas about rotations, matchups, fatigue, it goes from Dr. Rick Celebrini in sports and fitness through the cadre of head coaches, of which there are probably 10, many of whom none of us really know. And then it gets to Steve. You have meetings and matchups and all the rest of it. So the idea that Steve Kerr is sitting there like Oz in The Wizard of Oz behind some curtain, magically just picking who he wants to play, that's not the way this goes. And the whole thing about being a head coach in the NBA is so much more about coaching egos, massaging egos, coaching the coaches, creating a culture, and all the rest of it. So you look at Steve Kerr, who is the third longest tenured coach in the association, and he is, as I mentioned, behind only five coaches who have more titles than him, and he's coached a lot fewer games than all of them, except for John Kundla, who coached in the 40s and 50s.
I was going to say, who?
Yeah, it's Phil Jackson, Auerbach, John Kundla, Popovich, and Pat Riley. Those are the only ones ahead of him. So, yeah, Steve Kerr has been doing pretty well for himself.
Yeah, no doubt. And all those guys had great all-time players as well, obviously, because that's how
Kundla
it works.
Who did Kundla have?
I don't know. Who did he have? Who was good back then?
He was in the Minneapolis Lakers, so feels like there's some George Mikan in there.
Some George, I was going to say.
It's always safe when it's the 40s or 50s to go George Mikan.
Yeah.
Wow, Mikan carried him.
Yeah, I got that drill, right? More George Mikan.
That's right.
Morgan in Morgan Hill. Hi, Morgan. What's up?
Hi, guys. I actually wasn't calling to talk about Steve Kerr, but one thing I'll say about Kerr is, oh, my God, we're just so lucky that we got Steve Kerr. I mean, considering all of the years and the ebbs and flows of Draymond Green, the Jordan Poole punch, and then Kuminga complaining about playing time, and through it all, let alone the championships, Kerr has had total control of the locker room. We're just so lucky to have Kerr. But that's not why I called. I want you to ask Steve Kerr something when you interview him. You could decide to or not. And this kind of originated for me from the morning roast this morning on my way into work. So this is a kind of a continuation from then. I didn't have time to call in this morning, but I was getting really fired up because, you know, there's this thing in the morning roast going on the last few weeks where they defend Jonathan Kuminga to the very end. you know, they can't understand why everybody's calling to complain about Jonathan Kuminga. Why aren't people calling to complain about Moody going 3-for-11, Pajemski not playing, you know, why this and that. And here's my argument. The reason, one of the many reasons why Jonathan Kuminga is such a lightning rod. My argument is Jonathan Kuminga is the only player on the team who takes shots that he should not be taking. Why does he keep shooting threes with a guy right in front of him? I mean, he should be taking wide open threes, but he continues to shoot threes when his defender is right in front of him. Why does that happen? And so my question that I hope you can ask Kerr is, how often are they talking to Jonathan Kuminga about his shot selection? And I understand basketball is a fluid sport. You need to let him play and all that good stuff. But to me, Jonathan Kuminga is the only guy taking shots that he should not be taking. Thoughts?
All right, Morgan, thanks very much. It's actually, I don't think it's an uninteresting topic at all. I think that in general, the idea of shot selection, when you say how often are they talking to Jonathan about shot selection, I think they're talking to all the players all the time
right. About
shot selection. From what I've gathered from Golden State Warriors, they really want to encourage all of their people.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
To shoot the shot, it's all you got. Like when it's open, shoot it, and we're going to take your misses. We don't care about that. Now, that does not mean shoot it all the time. Yes, I think Steve has also called out certain players at times for shot selection, especially if it's early in the shot clock and whatnot. I see the same thing with Jonathan, not so much in terms of shot selection. The only way I can describe it is still the same thing that I've said for the last number of days, which is that it feels to me like Jonathan is still unsure of himself, at least around Jimmy Butler in what I feel is kind of a new team. Jonathan has only now had, how many games has it been since the injury? I feel like we're about 15, 17.
Yeah, less than
probably,
that, I think.
Probably yep. Somewhere in that neighborhood. Yep. And he just doesn't quite look sure of himself. And in the NBA, that ball is moving so quickly and the defense is moving so quickly. A split second of hesitation means a good shot turns into a bad one. And so, yes, there are some of those, but he's not the only one at all.
Agreed.
I mean, yeah. Steph Curry is a habitual bad shot taker. The problem for that conversation is he makes some of them.
Exactly. There is no bad shot with Steph Curry. And I just looked at Jonathan's 4 threes last night, and there was one, and this was in that woeful stretch in the fourth quarter where they went 1-for-8 in the first 3 minutes, and Jonathan gets it above the break, as Tim Roy would say, which means above the break where the three-point line fans out, right extended from the foul line, and he gets it with about 15 on the shot clock, and he shoots a three. It's not hotly contested, but it's contested, and it's the kind of three where you would probably rather he wait for the ball to touch a couple other people. That's a three that you take with 4 seconds on the shot clock, and you think, all right, that's a good three. We're late clock, but he took it early in the clock, and he missed it, and that's the only one of his 4 attempts that you could look at and think, bad shot. And it made me think about what you were describing with Jonathan Kuminga, where he's still trying to find his way, not only with Jimmy Butler, but since he's come back from injury. And I'm looking at the number, and it is 14 games since the ankle, and he missed another one because of the bruised tailbone or yep. the pelvic yep. contusion or whatever. So it's only been 14 games, and even at that, he's only playing between 18 and 25, 27 minutes. So he's not back in that you go cook flow, nor will he be. So when he's out there, I do think that he's kind of searching for himself, you know?
No doubt. 888-957-9570. Chuck in the city. Hi, Chuck. Thanks for calling.
Hey, thanks. I was struck by what Steve said last night after the loss. He said, they're already in the postseason. So if that's the case, I'm thinking, let's guarantee the big three a week's rest. Let's rest them for the last 2 games. You know, there's no guarantee that playing them is going to give them a rest next week. So let's have that rest now. What do you guys think?
Well, I think, Chuck,
the bold strategy, Cotton.
Yeah, let's see if it works out for him. Chuck, thanks. I wouldn't do it at all. And here's why. I get where you're coming from. Like, you see NBA teams now a lot prioritize rest over the standings. They'll do it. And so I get it. The problem is if you rest the rest of the way now, you're almost guaranteeing that you'll be the eight. You're almost guaranteeing it because, no, Minnesota's got two really easy games left.
After tonight.
Yeah, maybe you'd end up at the seven. And yes, I'm assuming that if you rested all three of your guys, you're probably going to lose both of those games. And that's not a guarantee. We've watched teams do that before, and they come out and win a basketball game. So who knows? But if the idea is go ahead and lose these next two and just guarantee rest and then take your chances in the play-in, the problem is the eight seed. Now you end up in Minnesota likely or Memphis on a Tuesday night. I don't like that scenario at all because you would probably be an underdog in the game. Doesn't mean you're not allowed to win it, but you're risking a somewhat probable loss there. And then you're putting yourself into a home game on a Friday night to get into the playoffs, and there's all kinds of bad stuff with that. First of all, it's a one-and-done scenario. It's a March Madness game. You just don't want to do that in the NBA. Secondly, even if you win it, you are then unrested and on your way to Oklahoma City.
For a Sunday game.
Terrible idea.
So there's the idea of rest. Yeah. And I do like the notion that the caller threw out there, but the best way to get rest is by avoiding the play-in. So you wrap up the season Sunday in a matinee. You're going to be there at Chase Center, 12:30 tip. You're done at 3. You win. You're the 6th seed. Now you've got Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and probably also Saturday off pending the schedule. You may not start your playoff until Sunday. They do like to put that marquee team in the marquee spot, so maybe it's Saturday, maybe it's Sunday, but at the very least, you've got 5 days off, maybe 6. There's your rest. So you got to grind this thing out. I do wonder about what happens if Memphis loses tonight against Minnesota, because now you and Memphis are tied for 6, which means you're the six.
Right.
Memphis and Minnesota would be tied for the 7. So you go out and you beat Portland, and maybe Memphis and Minnesota both lose. Well, then maybe you look at that Clipper game and think, okay, we're guaranteed to be the 6. Maybe you do take an extra day of rest in that scenario.
I still think you want to stay the hell out of the play-in tournament.
Yep.
But I will grant you this. Like, if you're a Warrior fan, I think you root for. You want Minnesota to win tonight and beat Memphis. And then Memphis immediately hits the road for a back-to-back in Denver tomorrow night. You want Memphis to lose that too. So if Memphis loses twice and you beat Portland, you have clinched no worse than the 7. And that way, I assume Minnesota's going to win out. I do think they would. You go into the Clipper game knowing if we win, we're the 6. If we lose, we're hosting Memphis on Tuesday night at Chase for a chance to go play the Rockets. Not ideal, but not preventative. Not the end of the world. If you can come out, I know it's scary, but then if you can handle that game Tuesday night and beat Memphis, which I like the Warriors' chances to do.
At home.
At home, if full health. You still are going to grant yourself, at minimum, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday off. I don't know if you would start on Saturday or Sunday, but you'd get at minimum 3 days rest. And your round one opponent would be the Rockets, which, I don't know, if I poll the universe, I think people think that that's easier than the Lakers.
Yeah, it's different.
I don't know if it actually is, but that's what a lot of people think.
After last night, I'm in your camp of I don't even care who they play, just get me a playoff series, because what I saw last night kind of shocked me to my core, to where no matchup is more favorable than the other if you play like that.
Yeah, I agree.